Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, it's the Bill Press Pod, back with you for another lively conversation with an astute observer of the American political scene. Thank you for joining us. Indeed, it's hard to fathom what's happening in American politics today. We have an aggressive new president, but the old guy refuses to leave the scene. The majority of Americans support action on climate change, gun safety, and protecting voting rights, but Congress refuses to act. It's not just one party versus the other, either. Republicans are split between those who still worship Donald Trump and those who want to move away from him. And Democrats are split between progressives who want to go for broke and pragmatists who want to settle for whatever they can work out with Republicans. How did we get into this mess and how do we get out of it? Nobody has a better handle on today's political scene than today's guest, Larry Sabato, a longtime friend, professor of politics, and founder and director of the world-renowned Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. Larry Sabato, good to have you back on the Bill Press Pod. Welcome.
It's delightful to be back with you, Bill.
So, Larry, I want to ask you, last Thursday, there's a lot going on Capitol Hill. I mean, they're trying to get an infrastructure bill passed, voting rights passed. They got the January 6th Select Committee. They got the big budget proposal. And Kevin McCarthy, Republican leader, takes the day off on Thursday to go to Bedminster, New Jersey, and sit down with former President Donald Trump. What does that tell you about the state of the GOP today?
It's still Trump's party. I don't know why anybody ever expected it to change. You know, there are various people, various factorums in the Republican Party who pop up on CNN and elsewhere telling us that Trump's influence is shrinking in the Republican Party. Where is that? I'm looking, you know, I'm perfectly happy to see it happen, but it isn't happening. And what he was really doing was going to see, pardon me, the crime boss. You know, when the boss calls, you go. You know, if you fear for your life otherwise. So he went and he went through his agenda and Trump said yes and no and yes and no. And I'll bet you any amount of money. He ran through the possibilities for the select committee on January 6th, the insurrection. And Trump said yes, no, yes, no. And he's going to get a committee on the Republican side of his liking. In other words, the crime boss was picking half the jury.
Yeah. Well, and clearly there was an agenda beyond just this January 6th committee. Wouldn't you agree that Kevin McCarthy sees that his path to taking back the House and maybe becoming Speaker in 2022 is loyalty to Donald Trump?
Yes. And of course, there's a little proviso there. Let's suppose the Republicans do take back the House. And of course, Kevin McCarthy is in line to become Speaker. Suppose Donald Trump, as he is wont to do, turns on him for some reason. Sometimes he turns on people just for the fun of it. I don't think Kevin McCarthy will be Speaker. Do you?
No, I don't. For a couple of reasons. That's one of them. And two, you know, there are a lot of people out with sharp knives out for Kevin McCarthy and the Republican caucus still, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And beyond the Republican caucus, he's going to get, if he does become Speaker, he's going to have one of the most difficult speakerships in American history. Because outside of that narrow band of Trump people in the caucus and outside the caucus, he is seen as public enemy number two or three, but he's on the list.
So back to 2022, if the Republicans, looking at 2022, are really making their case all about 2020, stolen election, illegitimate president. Is that enough for them to win? Not just for House seats, Senate seats, gubernatorial seats. That seems to be their sole platform.
Well, in the House, of course, is mainly about redistricting and reapportionment.
Right.
If you look at how that's being handled and how many big states they control, even though they don't win the statewide vote, they don't have to because they got in the last redistricting what they wanted, and probably the momentum will carry them forward for the next 10 years. But they control the redrawing of the district. So between redistricting and reapportionment, right there, they'll probably be able to take over the House. It would be a miracle if Democrats retained it with this kind of minor margin coming up in the midterm of a Democratic presidency. No matter how successful the presidency is, the incumbent president almost always, not always, but almost always loses seats in the midterm. So is that their only platform? Well, it seems to be so far, and it's enough to stir the Trump people. They'll follow anything that Trump says. And as long as he stays on board and encourages them to show up and vote, they probably will.
But is it enough to also alienate the suburban voters that turned away from Republicans and Trump in 2020?
Well, it might be, but that's where turnout comes in.
Uh-huh.
You have to get people stirred up to vote in a midterm. And frankly, Republicans almost always turn out, and Democrats frequently, and you know this from your time at the party, frequently they are fair-weather friends. And it takes an enormous amount of time and energy to convince Democrats that it's just as important to turn out in midterms or off-year elections like this one, as it is to turn out in presidential. So that's the challenge, Bill. And sometimes the party manages to do it, but most of the time it doesn't.
Right. They certainly didn't do it in Obama's midterms, right?
Exactly. There you go. If anybody was going to excite the base, it would have been Obama. He did excite the base, but he didn't excite them enough to cause them to take an hour off on election day. Now, that's the change. We do have better laws that are being revoked in Republican states, but that still exist in Democratic states. So it's possible that the widespread use of mail balloting, which people liked in 2020, they liked it. It was convenient. Not just the pandemic. They like the convenience of it. That may get the Democratic vote out sufficient to, if not hold the House, then make sure that Republicans don't get a massive majority.
So if the Republicans are running on, we got the election was stolen in 2020. Donald Trump's still our guy. This is in 2022. If they're running on that, what do Democrats run on? It looks to me like right now they want to run on, you know, we got shit done, if I can be blunt, right? We got the stimulus. We got the infrastructure. We got this $300 check for every kid in America. We got COVID behind us. There was a time, Larry, when accomplishments, right, getting stuff done was a winning message. Is it still?
Well, it can be. And they're going to have to use that because it is their best argument. And it happens to be true. that always helps. At least with the Democratic side of the electorate, it helps. You know, I don't think truth matters that much anymore on the Trump side. But yeah, that's the argument that Biden has, in a sense, or in more than one sense, rescued us from the disasters of the Trump years and the projected disasters of a second term of Trump. That's a positive message, but you also have to add the negative part, which is, if you let the Republicans get back in, they'll reverse every one of these changes at the first opportunity. Well, of course, Biden has the veto power, but it's a good argument because sometimes these massive bills get out of Congress and a president has to give thumbs up or thumbs down, even if he doesn't like a lot of the provisions in there. So it really is true. And you can give a positive and negative message that may be enough.
So if I read you correctly, you're saying that for the midterms, it's not inevitable that Republicans take back the House and the Senate, but likely.
Especially for the House. Uh-huh. But it is not inevitable, but I would say they clearly have the lead at this point for lots of institutional reasons. The Senate, as always, is squirrely. It's so idiosyncratic. And you look at individual states and their races, and you can actually see a path for Democrats to gain seats. I'd have to say that the path for Republicans to gain seats is a little bit clearer right now, but it's not so clear that they're guaranteed to gain the Senate as well. So the House is tough. The Senate won't be easy, but if some chips fall the right way, they might be able to hold on to the 50-50 or even get a 51-49.
So with the crystal ball, have you made a prediction yet on either House, or are you just waiting to see?
How can you make a prediction when we don't even know what the districts are?
Correct. That's right.
We haven't had redistricting. Now, on the Senate, we've got it essentially tied. We've got Democrats at 50, Republicans at 49 with one toss-up. You know which one it is? Pennsylvania.
No kidding.
Which has become one of the four or five most competitive states for everything in the country. So, and that's an open seat with Senator Toomey retiring.
Right. How do you politically now, how do you think Joe Biden is handling his new position as president of the United States?
Well, you know, I hear people say, what's happening? What is he doing exactly? They don't know the details because they're not paying close attention. And that, in this case, is actually a good thing. Everybody was exhausted after the four Trump years. You had to check in 10 times a day to see what crazy thing the guy had done lately.
Tell me about it.
and Biden is predictable. He's normal. People say he's boring. I'll take boring. Boy, I've learned to value boring. So I think he's done well. I think he has accomplished more than people thought he was going to accomplish. And look at the thin margins in both the House and the Senate. And Democrats are famous for infighting. It's amazing that with 6 months in, they've actually more or less stayed together. You know, yes, the Manchin problem and so on. But by and large, they're united. Here's my beef with him. He is too reliant on his experience in the Senate that no longer exists. He was there for so many decades. He's convinced that he has the ability to bring Democrats and Republicans together. And back in that era, he did do that.
Yep.
And when he was elected, Delaware was very competitive. He had to appeal to some Republicans. So he was very good at going right down the middle and getting people from both sides. That era is over. You can't find more than a tiny number of Republicans who are even targets for your bills, to vote for your bills. So he hasn't fully adjusted to that. And he's playing that bipartisan game in an era where it doesn't exist.
And I'm curious as to your take on Biden's impact on the party, too. Because, you know, let's take the 2020 primary, right? There was all the noise was on the progressive side there for a long time, right? I mean, Bernie was going to win. Bernie's going to be the nominee. And moderate Joe Biden won. Same thing in New York. All the noise was with the progressives, you know, that there was going to be the most progressive mayor ever in the history of the country. And Eric Adams won. Again, another moderate Democrat. Is this where the Democratic Party is going? Are they just sort of saying we got to be in the middle and pragmatic to win?
Well, that's what they're saying right now. We'll see.
Yeah.
They tend to forget quickly. But, you know, really, Bill, you put your finger on something because this is also a Trump effect that's not really discussed very much. It chilled the Democratic Party.
Interesting.
They remembered in 2016, and this is not to lay it all on Bernie by any means, but there were a lot of Bernie-crats who never came around to Hillary Clinton. And we got Donald Trump. And it reminded everybody of just how bad it can get. And so Democrats are enjoying being in charge. They're enjoying winning, but most of all, they're enjoying not having Donald Trump in office. He's still in our consciousness every single day, but he's not in office. He doesn't have the power to do the things that he wants to do. So I think it has moderated Democrats in some ways.
I'm sure you are watching, as I am, this a congressional race in Ohio, where Nina Turner, big supporter of Bernie's, friend of mine, who led the Bernie's Our Revolution after the 2016 campaign, is running for Congress with Bernie's support. And she's opposed by a Chantel Brown with James Clyburn's support. That's a real test again, right?
Well, it is a test, although in the end, does it matter very much? I mean, it's one congressional district. It's a guaranteed Democratic district. The winner of that district is going to vote with the other Democrats, especially because she'll be the most junior member of the House, and they generally don't make waves unless their name is AOC. So, you know, yes, it's a test, and yet it isn't. Look at how Bernie has been treated by Biden. He's been treated very well, and Bernie respects Biden, yeah, and he likes the way he's been treated. That is where Biden's personal skills really are making a difference.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it also shows that pragmatic side of Bernie Sanders, which I know, but most people have not seen and don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. Look, he was the first to say, you know, he wanted $5 to $6 trillion when it was $3.5 trillion. He said, this is terrific.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be in Congress. You have to make compromises, and you should celebrate what you get, not whine about what you didn't get. Well, there he is, and he's the signal to all the other progressives to do the same thing.
Sometimes it's important to take yes for an answer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the old line, too, about when somebody tells you who they are, believe him.
Larry Sabato, our guest, he's director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. We're going to take a quick break, come back with Larry, and talk about some of the other big picture issues here in American politics. And today's podcast with Larry Sabato from the Center for Politics, University of Virginia, is brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. The members of the UFCW under President Mark Perrone, they've been on the front lines all through the pandemic, continuing to serve us in their many roles, servicing and taking care of us in our big retail shops like Macy's and Nordstrom's, and our great grocery chains like Safeway and Stop and Shop, and our meat and poultry plants, chemical and cannabis plants. We salute the members of the UFCW, thank them for their good work, and thank them especially for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And we're back with Larry Sabato. He's director of the great Center for Politics down at the University of Virginia. Larry, you and I have talked politics a long time. You've been around it longer, as long as I have. Have you ever seen American politics so broken?
No, I'm really concerned about it. I never thought we would approach the divisions of the late 60s and early 70s. I thought that would be the high point or the low point of division. Well, we've gone way past that. I don't want to suggest that violence is in our future, but I don't think anybody would be surprised if it turned out that way. It's not just January 6th. I always remind people, I saw it earlier than most people, right in front of my house on UVA's lawn with the neo-Nazis marching by. And some of those same people, by the way, were in the January 6th insurrection or coup d'etat. It was a coup d'etat, the first one we've had since Lincoln's assassination, which was designed to decapitate the government, killing the vice president, the secretary of state, as well as the president. They didn't succeed with the other two. But look, this has got to concern everybody. People talk about polarization as though it's just an academic concept. But polarization at its extremes encourages violence because everything is black and white. Everything is black and white. There can be no compromise. Everything matters tremendously. And we're at that point virtually. January 6th set the precedent. The next time we have a unstable president, let's just put it that way, I wonder whether we'll see the regular transfer of power. A terrible precedent has been set. And once you set a precedent like that, you can't control the future.
Do you think our democracy itself is in peril?
I do indeed. I do indeed. I think people are less inclined to believe the obvious facts. They're willing, at least half of the people are, or close to half of the people, are willing to believe outright falsehoods if uttered by people they support, thinking Donald Trump, but also people beyond Donald Trump. There are loads of Trumps and Trumpettes in Congress and in other positions. You know, the Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's not alone. There are a bunch of Marjorie Taylor Greens. They're all around. They're scattered around the country in office. So the seeds have been planted for a lot of trouble, more trouble, and probably violence.
And I know you've written about this, but looking at American politics, the polls were so bad in 2016. We thought we could count on them because of some changes in 2020. That turned out not to be true either. What's the state of polling today, and what needs to happen?
Well, it's a mess.
to say the least, right? Yeah.
And I thought there was a very good chance that we could fix the problems in the system after 2016. And indeed, some problems were fixed. It just turned out there were additional problems and the analysis of 2016 had been off. It wasn't simply that a certain category of blue collars or, you know, non-college whites weren't participating in polls. It was much more extensive than that. For example, we saw a clear trend among a surprisingly large percentage of Latinos to Trump and the Republicans. Mm-hmm. That wasn't picked up really anywhere. Any of the major polls, nobody picked that up. We thought that Biden would get the same percentage, maybe even a little bit better than Hillary Clinton had gotten. Not true. Trump went up 8 points, which is a lot of points among a large minority group.
So is it to redesign these polls or just not count on them?
Well, you don't. I think we've all learned to look at them and study them and be interested in them, but also be willing to discount them, which, frankly, we did at the Center for Politics. We got 49 of the 50 states right, and we only got 49 out of 50 right because we ignored polling in a lot of places, like Florida, like Texas, like Georgia. There were other places where the polls were simply off, and it just contradicted everything we knew about the way things were going, the way we sensed things were going. So, you know, Bill, we're going to have to return to judgment. That's scary. We're going to have to get political professionals exercising judgment.
You mentioned the Latino vote. How do you see the demographics of this country, political demographics changing particularly, and which party does it benefit?
Generally speaking, the Democrats still benefit because you still get over 60% of Latinos voting Democratic. And we all know the Cuban Americans are an exception. But look, Mexican Americans started defecting too. Other subgroups of Latinos started moving more Republican. So these things change over time, and you have to really watch them. But on the other hand, Asian Americans, who used to be the most receptive to the Republican message of any minority group, mm-hmm. have moved solidly in the Democratic direction. They now outvote Latinos in terms of the percentage for Democrats. So every piece of the electorate is not stable, is not in concrete. Every election is different. The candidates are different. The issues are different. And you have to treat the voters as adults who can reevaluate their old positions.
But we see, for example, Arizona, right, moving at least into the purple column, not quite the blue, which certainly surprised the hell out of me. Could Texas follow that same path?
Well, eventually. How many election cycles, Bill, have we heard?
I know.
That Texas is going to turn blue. So, you know, I was very skeptical in 2020 with good reason. And I don't think it's anytime soon. Eventually, it will be competitive. What's eventually? I'm not sure we'll be around because we're retired on a desert island, not because of anything else. But I'm just not sure when that's going to happen. It is fascinating that Georgia and Arizona turned more quickly than Texas or North Carolina, which has been proposed for decades as a logical blue state. Well, it's still not blue.
Right. Yeah. And now Georgia and Virginia, as you point out. I know it's really too early to talk about 2024, but I do have to ask you that. Do you think Donald Trump is going to run, or is this just he pulling our leg?
I think that we'll have at least a half a dozen proto-announcements by Donald Trump. and then he'll pull back. But you know, he's the one thing he's good at is political calculations. I don't think people understood that before 2016. But his calculation is correct. He needs to keep all of his real and potential opponents off balance. And you do that by hinting you're running and then maybe pulling back and hinting you're running and then pulling back, because they really don't know what to do. They don't want to go all out for the nomination, because then they know Trump will target them. You don't challenge him and expect him to forget it. At the same time, they can't prepare. They can't get ready to run and win a nomination. So once again, Trump is going to screw them up. And really, it's richly deserved.
And if it's not, as you point out, those who might want to run, right, really can't certainly put a campaign together without alienating him. But if it's not Trump, is it really Ron DeSantis?
No. Look, we'll have loads of people who will pop up into, if not the front runner's position, then the number two and three position behind Trump. I don't know that one of them will be Mike Pence, who at one point was considered to be the logical successor, as most vice presidents are. But how does he come back? I mean, he's not an exciting politician, and he's lost Trump, and Trump is never going to back him again.
No.
Because he looks at Pence and says, we could have been in our second term except for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, forget about it, buddy. So I don't know. You know, you've got loads of people. Chris Christie wants to rank it. He's never going to get the nomination. And go through the 2016 candidates. There are a bunch of them who want to run again. There are a bunch of Republicans who've been elected since who want to run again. So or run for the first time. Hawley, who thinks he's one of the great heroes of January 6th, Josh Hawley, senator from Missouri, and Tom Cotton, another far right-wing senator from Arkansas. These people want to run, and they probably will.
Does Joe Biden run?
Boy, if his health is good, I think he will. Think of it this way. He has spent his entire adult life, really, either thinking about running for president or running. He was elected to the Senate at 29. I think it took him 24 hours before he started thinking about winning run for president. And he ran three times, okay? Yeah. Now, if you spend your whole life with one giant goal and then you get the prize, do you voluntarily give it up?
Hell no, right?
Of course not. So health is the only, and we wish him good health. We wish everybody good health. But I think health is the only thing that could turn him off to running. Or if for some reason, God forbid, events took control and it looked like a hopeless reelection race, I think he'd also step aside. But those are eventualities that have no proof at this point.
So finally, Larry, and you've been very generous with your time, you made little news yourself a week or so ago, where I was appalled to read that the head of the Virginia Republican Party sent a letter to the president of the University of Virginia demanding an ethics investigation into Larry Sabato because you had dared put out a couple of critical tweets about former President Donald Trump.
That a politics professor who's been around politics since the age of seven would actually have opinions and would express them on social media like Twitter and Facebook and so on. They're clownish. The whole group of them, they're clownish. They've lost every single election for a decade. And in Virginia, we have elections every year. They had plenty of chances to win. They just haven't won anything. So, if you want to have a bunch of enemies, you'd pick them. No question about it, because you can beat them. But it wasn't about me. This is happening all over the country. Just as Republicans are screaming about cancel culture, they're practicing cancel culture because they want to shut up people who don't agree with them. It's completely hypocritical, but they know their base applauds every time. The base doesn't recognize hypocrisy. And this is another classic example.
Not to mention that I thought that the university was a place for the free exchange of ideas, right? Isn't that?
Well, you're very old fashioned, Bill.
I guess so.
You have to get up with the current trends, and you clearly are not.
Yeah. I haven't embraced cancel culture yet, I guess. That's the problem.
Well, and also who's the snowflakes? Who's the snowflakes? A few tweets from me get them all in a dander? I thought the liberals were the snowflakes. No, it turns out the conservatives are the snowflakes.
Well, one thing for sure, Larry, I know they're not going to shut you up, and I don't want them to. And we can count on you to keep speaking out and count on you to, just spread the wisdom about the American political system today. That's why we turn to you so often. Thank you, my friend, for joining us today on the Bill Press Pod.
It's always fun, Bill, and wish you good luck and good health.
All right, great. Thanks, Larry. Talk to you again soon. And that's a wrap for today's podcast with Larry Sabato, University of Virginia, the Center for Politics. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back with our roundtable on Friday. Meantime, take care of yourself. Be careful. We're still not out of the woods yet. Wear that mask if it makes you more comfortable. Still practice your social distancing. Be strong. Be safe. And come back and see us on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.